We Will Not Be Tamed, a Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation podcast that encourages all Texans to get involved in conserving the wild things and wild places of our state.
This is Lydia Saldana with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, and today our podcast is powered by Zoom, and we are coming to you from all over the state. We have We Will Not Be Tamed Ambassador Hector Astorga coming to us from Mission, Texas, in South Texas. Texas Parks and Wildlife Department Chief Photographer Earl Nottingham is at his home in Temple, Texas, and Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation Photographer Jonathan Bale is somewhere on North Padre Island. So I want to start this conversation by just checking in with each of you about your work life and how that has changed in the last 6 weeks to 2 months. And Hector, I'll start with you.
Oh, thank you, Lydia. It's definitely changed. You know, as you guys know, I run the Santa Clara Ranch, which is a photography destination here in South Texas. And this is the time of the year that we're normally the busiest. Spring migration of the birds is what brings most of our clients down here. So starting in March through the end of June is when what we call peak season is when we have the most, you know, the most clients. For obvious reasons, we have shut down the ranch for the time being. But in a way, it's been good for me because it's given me some time to actually work on my personal photography and given me some free time that I don't have to be, you know, caring about clients. But it's definitely been different, you know. But it's all well, you know, it's all well. Looks like we're over the hump now here, and hopefully things will be improving soon.
There's always a silver lining to every cloud, right? And
yes,
I bet
ma'am.
You're taking pictures of them. So Earl, let's check in with you. What have you been up to?
Well, my schedule has pretty much stayed the same. Actually, I do a lot of driving, traveling around the state, photographing things. So, I'm still free to do that. I do have to be a little more careful when I travel, though. Obviously, every time I fill up for gas, I'm sure that the gas pump handle has been cleaned or I clean up after that. And of course, we try to distance from any people we run into. But, you know, most of the things are out in nature. And so I'm usually kind of away from people. So, one of the benefits has been there's less traffic on the highway. So it's easier to travel around. A lot of my shooting is for the magazine, and we've had to juggle some of the magazine stories around. We're changing some issues around due to the crisis. So, we're just changing stories, and that kind of changes my schedule a little bit. But so far, it's pretty much life as usual.
You know, I just got the May issue of the magazine, and I was going to send editor Louis Bond, a email, because I know that they pivoted and threw what they had in the lineup out and pretty much started over.
Yeah.
And the May issue of the magazine is just, it's wonderful. It's got resources for parents. It's got a piece on solo camping. It has a piece on what you can see in your backyard. Just shout out to the Parks and Wildlife Magazine crew. It's a really awesome issue.
Thank you.
So Jonathan, I know you're out for the first time on assignment in a couple of weeks. Kind of tell me what you've been up to.
Yeah, out for the first time, which is nice. I've been home mainly, but I got to go to Lake Corpus Christi Park the other day, State Park, and see what was going on there and see how everyone's dealing with this. And it was pretty cool to see families out. I mean, it was a big park. It was not very crowded, and everyone had their own spot 100 yards apart on the lake, and kids were playing and stuff, and got to talk to some of the families there who were happy to get out of the house with their kids and were glad the state parks were open. So it was definitely neat to see and see how they're kind of pivoting with everything changing day by day. But it was definitely nice to get out of the editing room and actually go shoot some stuff again.
Yeah, well, it's times like this that we are reminded about just how important our natural world is, how important nature is to us, how it sustains us. I know I've been getting out on daily walks just in the neighborhood, and that's been really nice. And I just got park passes for Friday. We're going to go do a bike ride at Mineral Wells State Park, and we're really looking forward to that. So that's good. So Hector, what have you been? You said you've been working on your own photography right now in this little hiatus from your other work. What are some of the things that you've been shooting?
Well, you know, basically been going to the ranch to just to keep, you know, keep up with the feeders, keep up with our feeding program for the wildlife, make sure our water holes are still going, you know, because the wildlife does not take a break from the from the quarantine. So we've just been basically keeping everything going. And of course, I've been shooting while I'm out there. I've been targeting different things. You know, I've been wanting to do some work with some roadrunners that I have right now at some of the blinds, and I've been doing that. When I shoot for myself, I'm very target specific. You know, in other words, I'll go out and I'll target a certain species or a certain thing that I want to do. So this has given me some time to actually do that. Right now, we've had some really good, northern bobwhite activity also. You know, everything's starting to mate, everything's starting, you know, their mating ritual. So we have a lot of fights between the males, and trying to capture that behavior is kind of what has been my goal for the last couple of weeks.
Well, that's awesome. I know, we've always been struck by the way that you get these incredibly unique shots of wildlife. And I know you've had your work at the Texas Parks and Wildlife magazine. Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation has also used some of your work in our publications. Yes, because it's just so striking. It's wonderful. So you mentioned roadrunners. Yes, so what is your strategy to get unique and unique shots of roadrunners?
Well, this time of year, there's a lot of mating activity, you know, and that's kind of what I've been targeting. They hang around the water holes. So of course, our blinds are set up by the water holes, you know, because as hot as South Texas and as dry as South Texas has been the last couple of months, you know, there's a lot of activity coming into the water. This time of year, you'll have the males walking around with prey, looking for girls. So it's trying to capture that behavior as the roadrunner is walking around with a lizard or with a mouse or a big grasshopper. Mm-hmm. And then I've been very fortunate that the other day, I think it was about a week or so ago, I had both the male and female come in, and I actually got the interaction of the male giving the lizard over to the girl. He wanted to mate with her. Unfortunately, she said no, she left. But it was a really cool experience just to watch that whole thing. And
he forgot the champagne, man.
I know. I guess the lizard was not, you know, not a good carrot enough. I don't know.
That's a story of my life.
but just capturing that behavior, that's what I really, really enjoy. And a lot of times, you know, I'll be honest with you, a lot of times after I get a shot, I just stop shooting and just watching the wildlife and learning behavior and just learning how these animals act and being very blessed to be able to witness this is basically what I love to do.
So you've got a huge back 40 to work with. You know, most of us have backyards and, you know, urban or suburban areas. And I'm going to ask Earl this question. I mean, because certainly we've got our feeders up. We've got our hummingbird feeders up. The squirrels are out. All manner of wildlife in our backyard. And Earl, could you offer just some tips to folks on photographing wildlife in their backyard?
Oh, goodness. You know, people don't realize, you know, you've got photographs everywhere in your backyard. I like to offer up a little exercise to people to stand in one place. And I say, look up, look down, look all around. You'll see something there to shoot. You look down at the ground, there'll be some miniature wildflowers for close-ups and macro shots. You look up, you know, you've got some beautiful skies. Oh gosh, the last few days we've had awesome skies. So at different times of day, you've always got something there to shoot. It doesn't matter what kind of camera you have. You know, look for the lighting, you know, do exercises in composition, but they're always there.
And Jonathan, I'm going to ask you the same question.
Yeah, I definitely agree with I get super into the macro photography just in the backyard or the water droplets after the rain. You can just go in the front yard and spend a long time just looking at ants and bees and butterflies flying around, and that keeps you really busy. And the hummingbirds as well, come to the hummingbird feeder, getting some like slow motion. And yeah, there's a ton of different stuff you can do. Just sit and watch. Is good advice, because something's going to happen.
Yeah, usually when we see something in our backyard that we want to photograph, we're usually so entranced with watching it that by the time we think about getting a camera or getting it, it's gone. And yesterday was a good example. We've got this family of crows that has just taken up in our backyard, and the crows were literally dive bombing our cat. And it was just hilarious. We sat out there watching that for about 15 minutes, and it was like, oh, we should get a camera. And then the cat, you know, got tired of it and came inside. But yeah, that's always a challenge for us. We get so entranced with watching it that we don't we don't think about stopping for the camera. Now, I know each of you all have had some incredible experiences in the field. And I know I asked Hector this question, so I'm going to start with you, Hector. Can you describe kind of an apex moment for you being out there in the field and getting a shot that you hoped to get and that you ended up getting? Can you describe what that shot was and what the experience was? And then Earl and Jonathan could be thinking about that while you're telling us.
Oh God, there's been a ton of moments. I guess probably when I was still competing for the Wildlife in Focus type contest, when I was still doing Valley Land Fund and Wildlife in Focus, just the beauty of these contests is that it really takes you out of your norm. You know, you have to photograph everything from birds to lizards to bees to scenes to so it really takes you out of your norm. I'm primarily a wildlife photographer, but I had to do some wildlife that I necessarily don't do most of the time, like macro. And just that challenge of trying to get something, you know, that's unique or that's different. I'm going to go kind of, you know, like I say, there's ton of moments, but I remember one specific moment that I was trying to capture a great horned owl in flight, and I wanted to do it at night. And this is before I knew about photo traps or infrared triggering systems. This was early on in my career. And I did a little setup at night, you know, at the ranch with some flashes. And I sat there pretty much, I would say, four nights every week for about 3 to 4 weeks to try to get this great horned owl in flight at night. And, you know, and then one night it just happened, you know, of course the reward is there and you're thrilled about it. But I think what I really enjoyed was mostly the experience of getting there, you know, what we went through, what I learned, you know, everything that I learned in those 4 weeks trying to get this owl, you know.
That's awesome.
But I would say that's probably one of my best ones, that I can really, really remember. But of course there's been tons of them.
You know? You've done a lot of, you do a lot of international work and you're doing international workshops.
Yes, ma'am.
And you mentioned something to me when we had a conversation a few weeks ago about one of those experiences with, was it gorillas? Orangutans?
Yes. You know, like I say, I'm very blessed that I'm able to photograph all over the world. And people always ask me, what is the number one thing you like to photograph? And mountain gorillas is up there for me. The whole experience of, you know, it's not easy to get to. You have to travel a long way to get to them. Not only flight-wise and getting to Uganda or Rwanda, but once you're there, you have to hike in to find them. And, then you finally find them and you're allowed 1 hour. You know, you're allowed only 1 hour with them. And then you realize how similar they are to us once you start photographing them. And they only give you 1 hour a day, you know, to be with them, because of course they're very well protected. And that whole experience, you know, it really is mind blowing for me. And out of everything that I do, out of everything that I photograph and all the places that I go, I would say that mountain gorillas is my number one place. I really enjoy photographing them.
Now, Earl, I'll have to say that you were kind of the granddaddy of this group of photographers.
Oh, geez, thanks.
In the best way. You've been at it the longest. I mean, you've been at Parks and Wildlife. Mm-hmm. What, I hired you back in what, 1996, was it?
We're coming up on 25 years.
Okay, 25 years. Yes. And that's right. We're working on a book about that. And I'm going to ask you about that in a minute. But is there one single moment that you can describe that you think about as one of the highlights of your photography career?
Well, you know, I've got a mirror, kind of what Hector said, there have been so many moments. I'll talk about one, but you start looking at what these common denominators of these magical moments are. And it's the best I can describe it, it's when a perfect storm comes together of your subject and the light and the composition, and then one little extra something that you never counted on. I call that the cherry on top. But when it all comes together and you hit that shutter, that one, you know, split second, and you know you've got it, you just want to scream, you know, yes, you know, I know I've got it. I was teaching a photo workshop several years ago at a Big Bend Ranch State Park. We had several people there, and it had been a hot, typical hot afternoon, but it was a rainy season out there, and everything was green, and the cacti were blooming, and So right before sunset, I mean, we had a drench, a big downpour. So all of the greenery was wet, and it just had these acrylic looking bright saturated colors. And at the very last minute, it was cloudy, but the sun opened up just one little slip there to the west. You may get a minute or two of light, of that warm sunlight skimming across the ground. And that hit like a spotlight. And I went crazy. I mean, all the participants thought I was going berserk. But I said, just shoot. You know, look any direction, take a picture anywhere, you're going to have a great shot. And, you know, that moment sticks out. It was just very eloquent light.
That's awesome. And Jonathan, you've been at it, what, professionally?
A long time, but not nearly as long as them. Yeah, professionally with Parks and Wildlife for about almost five years. And before that, I mean, doing it since middle school. And a lot of it was self-taught online and took classes in middle school and high school. But a moment that helped like spark my, I don't know, career, or just made me know I was like, wanted to do this for a long time, was in Hawaii in high school. We did a summer trip there, and I'd been getting really into landscape photography and reading about grad NDs and polarizers and stacking them on the front of the lens and everything, and had to get all that ready before Hawaii and learning about it, and then being able to put all that knowledge to use here on Kauai on the Nepali coast and the Nepali coast lookout. And it was just that kind of moment of sunset, just the perfect lighting and clouds. And it looked like Jurassic Park. Like the water was perfectly blue. You had pink clouds and then the green of the brush and the mountains, and had the grad indies on there to get all the details in the clouds, and everything was perfectly exposed and just like nailed a big panorama. That was one of my favorite shots I took there. So it was pretty cool to just have everything kind of click and come together and have like a finished product after all the time and learning about it.
Well, so we're going to need to post pictures of all the photos that you guys have referenced. I want to get copies of them. We'll post them online when we publish this podcast, because I think people would like to see that. How about in Texas, Jonathan? What's a moment in Texas?
Yeah, that was in Texas. One of them, I mean, there's been a good amount on all the travels we do, but you were out there at Elephant Mountain State Park,
yeah,
or wildlife management area, and being able to get the bighorn sheep and having those come up, which just huge rams with full curls, and being able to be within 100 yards of them and just being able to snap away on top of the mesa, just beautiful vistas. That was pretty epic to have that experience up there.
Well, we were up there with the Stewards of the Wild, right? And that was the Stewards of the Wild trip. And we were coming down that truck, and I remember that moment too. Your heart just starts racing. It was amazing. So we'll post some of those photos too. I want to change the subject here, because I had the opportunity to, and Hector, of course, I was familiar with your work, but I didn't really know your story till I interviewed you a couple of weeks ago for the magazine spread that is in the current issue, the May issue of the magazine. So Texas Parks and Wildlife Magazine readers can look at that spread and get your backstory. But for those of folks who are listening, I'd just like to kind of explore with each of you kind of how your career, your photography career got started. And Hector, just tell us that backstory, because I think it's fascinating.
Photography for me, you know, it started early. My father was into photography. I was born and raised in Honduras, as y'all know. And my father was into photography back when I was, early teens. And I got into it a little bit. You know, I used to play with this stuff. Now, my father was not a wildlife photographer. He was just a photographer in general. He had his cameras and he had all his lenses. And as you know, when you're a young, 12, 13-year-old, you emulate your parents. And I wanted to be like my dad. So I started borrowing his stuff and going out and playing with his camera. But it was really nothing very serious. Later teens years hit, we moved to Texas. Of course, the camera went away, college. Then I started my professional career after college. And photography, the interest was always there. And I always had a camera, but never really serious about it. But in 2007, I was doing some work for the World Birding Center in McAllen. the Quinta Mazatlán, in McAllen. And we were giving a bid. I can't remember. We were giving a bid, or maybe we were installing already. And the Valley Land Fund photo contest had just happened the year before. And they had all the winning images from the competition. And I'm walking around. And I've always been an outdoorsman, too, of course. I've loved to hunt, hike, fish, camp, you know, everything. And I'm walking around this place, and I'm looking at all these images. And I asked the girl, where were these taken? Are these all over the state? And she goes, no, this is the Valley Land Fund. These were all taken here in the Rio Grande Valley. And that just blew my mind away. I said, we have all this here? And she's like, yeah, the contest is here. You have to, you know, you have to photograph in the four, you know, lower, you know, Rio Grande Valley counties. And that got my mind going as, you know, I want to do this. I want this to be an extension of my current outdoor activities already. And that's how I kind of got started, you know, and went out, bought a better camera. You know, I didn't know much, you know, at the time. And then just little by little, joined TechSnap, which is the Nature Photographer Club down here in McAllen, and started meeting some people, started meeting some very good photographers that helped me along the way. And here we are today, 14 years later.
So you went from window blinds to photo blinds.
Oh, yes.
And didn't you win the Valley Land contest the first year you entered it?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Okay. So I know it's hard for you to toot your own horn, but that to me was a tremendous part of that story, that you entered that first year and you won.
And I think that was also a huge catalyst because, you know, I wasn't going to enter. And, you know, I entered Valley Land Fund back then was huge. And I had a full-time job. So I entered the what they call the small track competition, which you shoot in properties that are 100 acres or less. So I entered that track of the competition because I didn't want to enter the big, you know, the big, big ranches. And I said, you know what, I'm going to shoot at this little property that's close to home. It was 5 acres. I'll never forget it. It was a Patterson property, 5 acres. And people were telling me, you're nuts. You're not going to do well. It's only 5 acres. And I said, you know, it's only 5 acres, but they have a lot of wildlife and there's a lot of possibilities there. And, you know, here we are. 3 months into the contest, you know, we go to the awards and, you know, I was blessed enough to have won. You know,
what was that image, Hector?
Well, it's not an image. Remember, the Valley Land Fund and the Wildlife in Focus contest is an accumulation of points of your portfolio.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
So to win the grand prizes is that you turn in your portfolio.
Okay.
They you know, and you win different categories, like you can win the jays and the birds, you can win the lizards and the reptiles.
Okay.
And you get points. At the end, who has the most points, or basically the best portfolio wins the grand prizes.
That must have been thrilling.
You know, it was. It really, really was. And I think that was also a huge catalyst that it kind of, you know, a bulb lit up in my head and said, you know what, I think I'm actually pretty good at this. So that kind of kept me going more and more. You know, 2 years later, I entered a big contest and then I entered the big ones with Wildlife and Focus. And of course, I've been very blessed that I did really well in all of them.
And tell us the backstory of how you got involved with Santa Clara, because that's also another very interesting story.
You know, and after I won in 2008, Dr. Gutierrez Beto basically was starting the ranch and he called me up and he said, hey, you know, I'm starting this ranch. You know, I have some blinds already. Larry Ditto, which is a good friend, is helping me out. Why don't you come out and take a look and give me some pointers, see what you think. So he invited me out there. This was in 2009. And so I went out there just to take a look at the place. And I never left.
And, is wonderful.
And it's been a great story. You know, Santa Clara, when we first started in 2009, I think that year we had maybe 10 to 12 photographers visit us that year. Now, you know, the last 3 years, we sell out our spring season 12 to 16 months ahead of time. And we're hosting over 300 photographers from all over the world every year, you know, at the ranch. So the ranch has been a really, really good success story. And also the ranch is a huge catalyst of my personal work and where I am today. It's been a great relationship with the ranch and I. And I am today in huge part because of the Santa Clara Ranch.
That's really awesome. Okay, Earl, tell us your story.
Well, I will. But, you know, before I do, I do want to give a shout out to Hector. A lot of times people contact me wanting to submit photographs to the magazine of wildlife. And, you know, some of them are just kind of status quo shots. And I always reference them or send them to Hector's website. I said, this is what wildlife photography is all about. You know, look at his work. You'll see the behavior. You'll see beautiful light composition. But the main thing is the behavior of the animals. And that's what really sets a lot of his work apart. So I'm a big Hector fan.
But thank you.
But for myself, I'm going to date myself as the old guy here. But back in the early 60s, I guess when I was early junior high, my brother was in the Army, and he sent me a Polaroid Swinger camera. white camera, black and white pictures that you had to apply the coating to after you shot it. So I went around the neighborhood photographing cats and friends, everything, and I just thought that was cool. About the same time, we had a studio across the street from our junior high. It was just a portrait studio, and I'd kill time after school each day, go hang around, and the gentleman who owned it one day showed me how he actually developed the black and white prints in the darkroom, and that was a magical moment, and that's all it took to really fall in love with photography and darkroom photography. So at school, I did the high school yearbook thing and the annual. After graduation, went on to an art institute in Atlanta, Georgia for a couple of years. Thought I was ready to be a professional photographer, and worked at the local newspaper for 2 years. And I don't want to do this the rest of my life. So I wanted to get some kind of a degree in it. And I ended up going to what used to be East Texas State University. Now it's Texas A&M at Commerce, but they had a photography a degree program, and I got that. And that was probably one of the biggest helps in my career, because it had a very holistic curriculum, you know, portrait, commercial photography, industrial, photojournalism, the whole thing. And that has been the biggest help in my work now, because we have to do a little bit of everything. I guess if in medical terms, if I was a doctor, I'd be a general practitioner. You know, I'm not a specialist like Hector. But, you know, we have to do a little bit of everything at Parks and Wildlife. It's the magazine work, and it's portrait, it's commercial, everything. So, I guess the best education I had was the School of Hard Knocks through the years. Learning by doing. You know, at Texas Parks and Wildlife, I had to work with all the different divisions. You know, it's not just the magazine. A big part of it is working with the law enforcement, the game wardens. I've got to say, probably some of the most memorable things I photographed have been documenting the game wardens, like during hurricanes and search and rescue, things like that. So it's been a lifelong learning process. I'm not done yet. I love embracing the new technology, the video now. When our cameras started to become or to have the ability to shoot video a few years ago, well, then all my supervisors started expecting me to shoot video. So I've really enjoyed that though. And so I'm a geek, you know, I like cameras, I like playing with them, but you know, I like using them in a way that best tells the story at the time.
Yeah. You know, Earl, one of the things that I most admire about you, and of course, we were fortunate to share some time at Parks and Wildlife together, but is how you've evolved with the technology. I mean, when you got here, Parks and Wildlife still had a dark room. Mm-hmm. I remember that. And I remember the discussions about going to digital and now mm-hmm. video. And I just want to give you a personal shout out for just your ability to evolve as the technology evolves. And to your point, it is all about the story that we're trying to tell, right? Through imagery, and that's not going to change.
Yeah. The technology has given us not only the ability to better tell the story, but more ways to get our story out. We have a philosophy now. We call COPE, C-O-P-E. We create once and publish everywhere,
right?
To get most bang for the buck. So, you know, I may go out and shoot still photograph of something, but I'll shoot it, you know, in video at the same time. So, you know, we can run it in the magazine, or we can run it on social media, or some of the footage can be used on the TV show. So, you know, we try to get the word out the best we can with the resources we have.
Okay. So, Jonathan, you mentioned your kind of backstory when you were talking about the imagery that you shot in Hawaii. You want to talk a little bit about how your professional career has got started? And then I might tell a story too, but I'll let you tell yours first.
Yeah, so I went to UT Communication School, was a journalism major there, and needed an internship to graduate. I'd done multiple internships before in high school and stuff, but I knew I wanted to do nature, kind of wildlife photography, so parks and wildlife was kind of what I had. That was my one and only shot, really. I was just like, that's what I want to do. I want to go there, and just reached out and eventually got your email, I think, and you said you send over a portfolio. And so I sent over my portfolio, and you let me in the door, which was great. And that got me in for an internship with Chase Fountain, who's the other photographer at the magazine. And so that was an amazing opportunity to work under Chase. And that was for like 6 or 9 months working with him and shooting articles. I mean, within like a month of that internship, I think I had a shot in the magazine, which was awesome. And then we just kept going from there. And then you found, I remember, because at UT, we had to learn, they prepared us pretty well for all our classes. We learned audio editing, video editing, and photo editing. I'd done plenty of photo stuff, but so I was learning video and doing podcasts at UT. And then you found my YouTube page, my student YouTube page somehow, and like, you can shoot video? And I was like, I guess, like, I'm a photographer. And you're like, wait a second, this is good. And that just changed everything. And
it did change everything.
Here I am shooting, yeah, video and photo and doing podcasts for the foundation.
Yeah, and now I get to tell the story. And I don't even know if I've told you this story, Jonathan, but the way that we got connected was the former Parks and Wildlife Foundation Executive Director Annie Brown gives me a call, and she said, hey, there's this UT student, and one of our board members, you know, would like us to consider him for an internship. And I got to tell you, I just kind of rolled my eyes, right? I'm like, okay, great. All right. But then you sent me the link to your photo, your work, and I was like, hot damn, and no offense meant here, this kid is great. So then you went through that internship, and it was about, I guess, 6 months after that that you shared with me the video thing, and I was like, you shoot video too? And you know what? We've come a long way in 5 years, and you know, I don't know what we would do without you, Jonathan, because you really do it all. You shoot incredible photos. You shoot great videos. Those video skills are improving by the day, by the week, by the month. Your work is just wonderful, and it's been really cool to be part of that and to kind of watch you blossom. And I know the best is yet to come. So we had a little technical difficulties, and these things happen. So Jonathan's going to be doing some editing here, but let me just pick up with that question just about conservation and what that means to you, and how photography kind of plays into your passion for conservation. And Hector, I'll start with you.
Well, you know, to me, it's being in South Texas, and you know, the South Texas brush is by far one of my favorite places to be at. And every day we lose more and more. You know, the Hidalgo County, where when I moved down here, I think the population was 300,000. We're over 1 million now here in Hidalgo County, you know, the McAllen area. And so we're losing more and more of our brush. To me, photography just shows people what we have, and shows people why we have to preserve these lands and keep, you know, the habitat for this wildlife to live. And if my work can show people that we can do this, you know, and we need to do this, you know, to me, it's just a huge advantage of what I do. It's something that I'm passionate about. At the ranch, you know, we have a conservation easement that, and it's a easement that's for perpetuity, that the land will never be touched. It will never be farmed. It will never be cut down. So the wildlife will always have that little haven. Although we're a very small ranch for Texas standards, we're only 300 acres, but those 300 acres of native South Texas brushland will always be there. You know, will never be torn down. It will never be developed. It will never be farmed or ranched. And that's important because, again, we lose more and more of our native brushlands every day.
Well, thank goodness for Texas landowners who are conserving their land forever through easements. It's wonderful.
Yes, and that's, you know, that's important. You know, as you know, Texas is 90-some, I might be a little off on the numbers, but Texas is 90-some percent privately owned.
95%, yeah.
There you go. And you're right, you know, Valley Land Fund, Wildlife in Focus have done a great job in bringing awareness of why we have to preserve these lands. And they've done it through photography. And I'm very happy that I've played a little part in that.
Okay, Earl, your take on kind of conservation, your passion for it, and how your work plays into that.
Well, you know, prior to my employment with Parks and Wildlife as a freelance photographer, my goal was to just go out and get pretty pictures of things and pictures that were hopefully marketable through magazines and calendars and anybody I could sell them to. So I really didn't hear the word conservation very much until I got to Parks and Wildlife. And that made all the difference because prior to that, photography in me was f-stops and shutter speeds and, you know, lenses and cameras. But what the conservation aspect did was to realize that the camera was only a tool to share a message with people. And of course, the agency's message was conservation. So, and conservation encompasses so many different things. You know, depending on who you talk to, you know, Texas is what 95% privately mm-hmm. owned. So that means there's not a lot of public lands for people to go to. Most everything is happening on private lands, and that's where conservation happens. It's the way we take care of our water, the way we take care of our wildlife, the way we take care of conserving our history, culture. It's a multifaceted thing, and so the camera is only a tool to show those things. So I guess I've learned conservation through osmosis through the years. Again, all the facets of it, and hopefully using the nuts and bolts of the camera along with some artistry, you know, composition, lighting, to show conservation off in its best face. And hopefully the images that we create have an impact on people. It makes a difference in what they think of conservation and how they react, and basically in the long run, how we change the world with it.
Thank you, Earl. Jonathan, your perspective.
Yeah, so I kind of grew up outdoors. We had a family ranch outside of Boston. So growing up young there, running around and camping, and that's kind of what led me into photography, is just seeing the outdoors and wanting to capture that and bring that home and show it to other people, and going out to Big Bend and stuff. So that was always my favorite, is trying to capture that and then showing other friends and families photos. And then just like the best reaction is like, that's in Texas? And you're like, yeah, Texas has all this. It's so diverse. And so I love just showing how diverse Texas is. And because even Texas can look like any state in the West, like at some point in it. And so it's pretty cool to show that, because people, they don't know about that and they're not going to want to keep it, and they want to go visit it. That makes them go visit it. And I think that's like the best way to show some conservation, is just have people want to use it and want to go visit it, because then it'll stick around for everyone if there's demand for it.
And also want to take care of it, right?
Yeah, and take care of it. Yeah exactly.
Well, I'm going to wrap this up, because this was supposed to be like a 20-minute podcast, and we're now like twice that length, just because this has been a good conversation. I want to just wrap this all up with Hector. And Hector, I started the podcast by introducing you as the We Will Not Be Tamed ambassador. And of course, that's a Parks and Wildlife Foundation program to kind of broaden the message about conservation in Texas and get people to get involved with us. Why did you choose to be involved with We Will Not Be Tamed?
Well, going back to what we talked earlier, you know, trying to showcase how we're losing our native lands to development, and how, you know, what's important and what we need to protect. And I think the program is a fantastic way of showing this. It's a fantastic way of showing the wildlife that we have, or, you know, showing my work. And this, you know, this will go away if we don't protect these lands. And when Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation called me, I mean, and I've been a fan of Texas Parks and Wildlife ever since I moved to Texas, you know. Like I told you earlier, when I first started my career, I started meeting people and I started looking at other people's work. The magazine was something that I picked up right away. I used to look at Earl's work. I used to look at Chase's work and say, hey, you know, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to be in, you know, 2-3 years. So the opportunity to work with the foundation was just, to me, was just a blessing.
And well, we appreciate you being part of it. And I thank all three of you for helping us in some cases stumble through this podcast a little bit, but I know Jonathan's going to fix it all in the editing room and it's going to be awesome. So thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you, Lydia.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you.
Brought to you by Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation. We Will Not Be Tamed calls us all to appreciate the wildness of Texas, the vastness of our Texas spirit, and why we should be inspired to conserve it. Find out more at wewillnotbetamed.org.